The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY with no spaces. And you'll save an additional 20% on these already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout to save big. Now, let's get on with the show. All right, I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another Monday Morning Tech Chat show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. And the QA, of course, stands for Question and Answer. We like to kick off our week an interactive conversation on all the top tech news stories. It's why I like to hold my podcast on a Monday. Gives us that time from the last week to sort of sort out our feelers on what might have happened. Maybe some breaking news, you know, breaking news broke over the weekend. That's an awkward way to say that. And Dave Burns, is Juan going through his blue period? Blue chair, blue shirt, blue hat. We're gonna jump right in. Let's start conversing. This shirt is really fancy. You see, it says Juan on the shirt, and this is actually some really super cool merch. Here, I'm gonna see if I can. Can I turn around? Yeah. I'm way off mic for that, and now I'm probably out of focus. The lovely gents over at Across the Podcast with Sam and Matt were kind enough to send me a shirt, so I'm gonna sport some merch for some buddies of mine on this week's podcast. Oh wow, Boing Bite taking it back. Blue da da bee da da bye. And Dave Burns, it's Across the Podcast with Sam and Matt. Dave Burns, weren't you just recently on Across the Podcast with Sam and Matt? Was that what transpired in my birthday absence? Because I was sort of unplugged yesterday. Drop me some comments. I'm already seeing some great chatter here. It was an interesting week, and I'm loving the faces that we're seeing in the live chat now. We're gonna have a lot of topics to cover and a lot of conversations to be had. Why don't we jump straight into some housekeeping? We have a little bit to cover in housekeeping, and we can get through this as efficiently as we possibly can. Whenever I say something like that, I think that should be the clear indication that housekeeping might run a little long. So, Dave Burns, bon anniversary. I don't know how to say that with an actual French accent. I never learned how to speak French. Matt Tyler is saying housekeeping in 7 minutes and 37.2 seconds. Matt Tyler is being entirely way too kind. Let's kick this over into some screen share. I'm really proud of this video that we knocked out early next week. Again, continuing my hashtag 2020 hearing campaign, get the best fit for your in-ear buds. And the thumbnail says, shove them in your ears. Now, I'm a hearing health advocate. That's something I've decided to be. It's shocking how little we're discussing epidemic rates of hearing loss across numerous age demographics, and I'm trying to use what little audience I can muster and what little signal reach I can provide for talking about this from at least a techie perspective and ways that we can improve the situation. And I hear from a lot of people that, oh man, I need to use these open earbuds because I once tried a pair of in-ear buds and they hurt. I totally appreciate that in-ear earbuds can be a little uncomfortable or at least unfamiliar. Like the first time you try and put something in your ear canal can be very foreign feeling. But I also talked to a lot of people who seem surprised when I mention that there's more than one kind of ear tip. You know, so hey, what did you try? You're like, oh, I tried in-ear earbuds. Right. And what was on the tip of them? What came in the box? So there are numerous options for you to experiment a little to get a better fit. It's going to improve the audio quality of your content. It's going to reduce noise in your environment. You can go single flange, double flange, triple flange, foam, custom molded ear tips. There's a wide variety of ways to help improve the audio quality experience. So I made a video. Oh, and Dave Burns, and bone conduction is also an option. I love it, like, parentheses in chat is sort of like, sotto voce, I'm whispering really loudly. But yes, plenty of different solutions to improve your audio experience. Next up, I just had a cranky rant. This is a trend that I hope is not taking root across numerous other devices, especially as we're right on the precipice. We're going to be talking about Surface Duo and dual screen phones and folding phones and more productivity and more multitasking. So it's been especially disturbing to me seeing app developers start catering to one side of the smartphone divide. I got to take a drink of water here real quick. Title of this video was Netflix, Fix Your Android App, Bring Back Multitasking. It's recent. This is a recent update. So when I started reviewing the LG Velvet, I showed off, you know, like, hey, I'm watching this really awesome Michael Jordan documentary and playing a game on my phone at the same time. Two screens are better than one. Objectively, everyone seems to understand this. So you can imagine my disappointment when recently I tried to do the same thing and I just, hey, maybe I want to rewatch the first season of Madam Secretary. I'm kind of a sucker for, you know, stodgy Sunday night political dramas, right? I fire up the video and then I'm like, oh, let me check in on my Discord. And as soon as I touch the screen, the other screen from my Discord, the whole video freezes. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. So I try it again. I play the video and then I touch the other screen, totally locks up. So Netflix is kind of quietly removing some of these power user features. It's no longer automatically whitelisted for split screen. They're focusing on picture-in-picture, and it seems pretty clear to me that a lot of app developers are going, well, now that the iPhone has picture-in-picture, that's all we need to support now, and that they're trying to minimize the different app development costs. But this, you know, this multitasking snafu is very disappointing. This is a power user Android feature, so it can't be judged by what do average consumers do with their phones. This is something that is a more niche type of situation, but I don't want it to be taken away. And this is what gets so frustrating when we cater to like the lowest common denominator use from the largest audience with the most popular devices, is we lose out on these exciting extra features. And you want to dig a little deeper. There are all these really cool things you can do, but they're starting to get whittled away. We're starting to lose them in light of this, you know, sort of YouTube algorithm popularity discussion on tech. So it's really disappointing. Then get this out of the way here. Oh, from Alice Bockley. I really appreciate these videos, Juan. Even though I have no immediate need for these devices, it sure beats banging on in every video about Mystic Bronze. I am planning on spending some time with the note before the end of the year. I'm going to detail some of that at the end of the video. Let's get through housekeeping because we have a few more things just to wrap up. Just another quick little accessory review. I nerd out on office tech. You know, like I've reviewed BenQ lamps and standing desks and these types of products I really like. I mean, I work from home and now a lot of us are working from home. So you might be in a situation where, you know, a company issued laptop or your own computer just needs a little extra space and you're not looking to permanently dedicate, you know, like I've got a dual screen setup with desk arms and I've got a little small home office here. So when products like this come my way, I get real nerdy excited. This is the WiMAXit portable touchscreen monitor. You know, it's around $200. If you go to the YouTube video, there is actually a promo code that they hooked up. I'll let you figure out what that promo code is, but you can save another like 9%. That doesn't financially benefit me, but you could save a little extra cash with that promo code. So this is a USB-C connected portable display. It's a 15.6-inch monitor. You can touch and swipe and pinch and zoom to your heart's content. But there are a few little upgrade perks on this over some of the other cheaper portable monitors that I played with, and some things that maybe make it a little bit more of a crossover. Like you could semi-permanently set it up in a home, disconnect it from a stand or a mount, and then throw it in a magnetic cover and take that as your laptop whenever we start traveling again. These kinds of things are really, really, they're so stinking cool, but they're really handy. When we started doing shelter in place and my wife's job was awesome, like immediately from the get-go, once all this stuff started coming, they had all of their employees working from home. We didn't have a setup for Marie ready to go. So we jury-rigged an inexpensive portable monitor. At the time, it was a really plasticky one. It was like under $200 that I had gotten from another review. And for the first month of shelter in place, that was her work setup. So we're still sorting out. A lot of companies are still trying to figure out what to do here. And there are options and solutions for us to expand our sort of computing workspace as minimally as possible. You know, again, we also don't want to completely disrupt our living space just to support a work from home space. So I enjoy putting videos together like that. They're always death on YouTube. Like I think this one over the weekend maybe drummed up 2,500 views, something like that. So the algorithm is absolutely looking at my channel like, you know, what's this garbage? But I'm going to keep making those videos because I like them. two more little bits of housekeeping and we're through. One of the reasons why I haven't been cranking out as many videos over the last 2 weeks as I had kind of planned to is we get to the end of a podcast and I'm like, oh, and I've got this coming down the pipe and I've got to finish up this and be on the lookout for that. You know, time is a finite quality, is a finite commodity, I should say. And I have been enjoying taking a little extra time with one of my favorite yearly activities, and that's how do I update my photography book. So the updates are now totally live. This is Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs, updates for 2020. And I have a number of significant updates to the book that I don't know that I would have been able to pull off if I had tried to hold to my original, because I try to write through the year and then update early the next year. So, you know, like my updates for 2019 actually happened pretty early at the beginning of 2019. If I had done that here, I would have missed out on a couple of chapters that I was able to accomplish by taking a little extra time. This is a really awkwardly roundabout way of saying new chapters in the book. I've got a chapter dealing with these new super megapixel image sensors, you know, 48 megapixels and 64 megapixels, and what that actually means, you know, whether or not that's, you know, it's intellectually dishonest or if it's just marketing or if it's technically true but not practically true. And then almost every single passage dealing with phone technology got some kind of update. I was going through and I was looking at my examples of camera apps, and the photos I was using of camera apps were all from phones in like 2015, 2016. You know, like, here's a section on Android. And, you know, it's like, oh, I'm showing you the LG V10. Camera apps have changed quite a bit since the LG V10. So lots of sprucing, some formatting errors. I'm still trying to sort out. I have a couple bugs with you submit a manuscript or you know, your document to Amazon. And then Amazon does a whole host of auto formatting. So I'm still working out. When I submit something and I've got photos positioned in a certain way, and then Amazon gets a hold of it and reformats, I'm trying to figure out what I can do to clean up some of those image errors. But on the whole, the book is looking a lot prettier. A lot of photos got updated, so I had more recent or more current examples. And then almost every single chapter got some kind of update. There's a chapter I had on multiple camera sensors that was just focused on, like, iPhones added a zoom. Well, it's like, now I've got to talk about macro sensors and depth of field sensors, time of flight, and ultra low light sensors, like what you can find on the TCLs. There's a ton going on with the book. So it's a pretty substantial update. And like I said, I'm excited because I feel like if I had just pushed go at the very beginning of 2020, I would have missed out on a lot of this. Like, the book would have been updated. It wouldn't have been as comprehensive an update as what I was able to pull off. So available on Amazon Kindle, Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs. And then one other thing that has been taking time. Again, it's like I am a singular producer. I have zero backup. Everything I do, everything that happens on the channel, on the blog, in live streams, everything goes through this quantity of time. We've got an update for some more merch. I'm really excited about this. It takes me so long to proof new merch, but if you go to teespring.com/stores/somegadgetguy, and this link will be on somegadgetguy.com, we have the Mega Pickle mugs, which I am obnoxiously sipping ASMR style right in front of my microphone. I'm bringing back the bouquet t-shirts and hoodies, so you know you can proudly correct people's mispronunciation of a beautiful Japanese term, as boca means mouth in Spanish, and the Japanese, whether or not you say K or ke, it is two distinct syllables. Boca is not a photography term. Bokeh is a photography term. And then we have the new endangered species shirts in a premium tee, in a women's comfort tee, and in a premium long sleeve tee, so that you can also show your support for the headphone jack, which is an amazing jack. Still probably the most versatile connector ever to grace our portable electronics. One of the last true universal standards that isn't, you know, kind of caught up in one company's licensing fees. It's an amazing piece of hardware that we should not let die. And it's coming back on a number of different phones. Like, when Sony brings it back, you know, this is serious. This is serious business. Super serious. And I'm going to take a sip of water out of my green Megapickle mug because it's more delicious out of this mug. Aditya Nil, I'm having lemonade in my Megapickle mug and it tastes delicious. Believe me, my lemonade is okay at best. I believe Aditya Anil's lemonade brings all the geeks to the yard. I tried. I could not stick the landing on that. But yeah, lots going on. Merch store, updates to the book, videos, podcasts. I'm going to have a whole series of videos coming out with Newegg. I might also be publishing some written articles over on Game Crate. So we're keeping busy. This has been a very busy time for tech. And yeah, This is there's a lot going on. From DCJ Reviews, not being greedy, but I'd love if OEMs paid as much attention to the 3.5mm jack as LG if when it comes back. From Josh Heslop. Hey, Josh, how's it going, man? Sad the Surface Duo does not have it, but thankfully they have a USB-C hub already with a jack. And I maybe splurged the $12 to get the Microsoft USB-C headphone dongle. So we'll see how that sounds. Funnily, that should be showing up in another day or two. Out of all the things that Microsoft might be shipping to my house soon, that one's already sort of packed and ready to go. And then Dank Pikmin God was here. What are your thoughts on Samsung bringing back the headphone jack for the S21 Note 21? It would be a wonderful move from Samsung. It will be frustrating because if Samsung does it, it's going to get all kinds of positive buzz and, oh, now you headphone nerds, you can come back to Galaxy and whoa, much respect and Samsung this and Samsung that. When these last 2 years, all the Samsung stands have been, oh, you don't need it, you know, get over it, go to Bluetooth. And again, it's for the rest of us outside of the Samsung reality distortion field. It gets super frustrating because we know what the game is. The game's rigged. Samsung can't do wrong by the massive amount of people that want to praise Samsung for better YouTube SEO metrics. So I will personally be happy. It would make a Samsung product much more viable for me as a work platform. I rely on headphone jacks and I don't like having to use a USB-C adapter to get my work done. Even for a phone like the Pixel 4a, you know, when I shot a Pixel 4a walk and talk vlog, boy, howdy, was that easier being able to just plug my microphones directly into the phone and that the phone recognized it and was ready to use it in the video app. Headphone jack. So yes, it would be really nice if Samsung does this, but I also feel like where was all of it? If Samsung does it and they get a ton of praise, I'll be angry that Sony didn't get this quantity of praise, right? We had to find all these reasons why the Xperia 1 Mark II might not be as good a phone as some other phones or more or less expensive phones. But I guess it's kind of cool if they bring the jack back, whatever, if you cared about that. And I'm kind of over that rigged game in tech reviewing. It's obvious and it's not fun. So, from Josh, again, talking about the Surface Duo, I would love to see a camera review. That's the one thing I'm waiting to see before I pull the trigger. I actually have my expectations for Surface Duo's camera are pretty low, but I'm looking at this as a Surface device in an age of work from home. Will it be able to just pull off the basics? And Microsoft was able to sort of lean on that old Nokia relationship back in the day. It doesn't take much to deliver decent photography from a phone. And it doesn't need to be the bestest camera ever. Oh, business people can't handle a compromise. I'm pretty sure they can. And again, considering what Android phones sell, there is no such thing as best camera. So it's going to be fine as long as the camera isn't just an absolute tragic, you know, like miserable shooting experience. You can look at a Pixel 4a. I doubt Microsoft has the chops to pull off Pixel 4a photography, but the Pixel 4a is using pretty much the same image sensor we've had in play since the Galaxy S7, and it's using it to wonderful results. It's better that Microsoft used an older camera sensor that's better understood than trying to cram one of these 48 or 64 megapixel sensors when you can tell that the primary use is probably more like group video conference calls. And it can also function as your, you know, sort of point-and-shoot, snapshotty shooter. My expectations are they would get better results out of an older sensor that's better understood and that takes up less system resources than trying to push the boundaries on photography. And we can see how that doesn't always play out as well as we might hope. There are a lot of really uber cheap phones out there that are using more advanced camera sensors, and the results aren't as nice. So we'll have to see. Matt Tyler, I missed the beginning of the show. Nice shirt, Juan. Oh, you mean this shirt that has my name on it? That has this really cute like microphone logo and a couch. And then on the back has Across the Podcast with Sam and Matt. It's a pretty neat shirt. I like it. All right. I want to kick this off. We have a lot of news to cover. Obviously, like I said, housekeeping was going to take us a little long, and I wanted to get through some of the chat here. But I want to spend a little time just starting off. I absolutely hate how genres of content on social platforms like YouTube start to boil everything down into a lowest common denominator format. If you want to build a popular channel on YouTube, there's like a template for doing super low effort vlogs, just talking about YouTube drama, and then you're contributing to YouTube drama. So hopefully you become a part of the drama, and then YouTube will blow your channel up. Because you're talking about popular topics and people are searching for these popular topics, and it becomes this really aggressive echo chamber. And I think similar things happen in tech. If it's Samsung versus Apple, boy howdy, YouTube will blow your channel up. If that's all you want to talk about is Sam Apple, then you have a much easier go of building, maintaining, and getting shared with an audience. I think it creates the worst look for geeks when YouTubers start becoming the story as opposed to covering aspects of tech. This is a really clumsy and roundabout way. It's not like I have a script here to kind of focus in on what it is that I'm trying to what I'm trying to get at here. But a situation broke over the last week, and I was very disappointed in how techies responded to a minor controversy. I casually know both of the YouTubers involved. And so what I'm talking about is a group of nerds coming to the defense of one YouTuber, casting aspersions against another YouTuber, and we ultimately arrive at a really bad look for our community. When I was producing the Pocket Now podcast, we were trying to have on guests, and we had on Jacqueline from Nothing But Tech 88. She is a driven, intelligent, gracious young woman producing top quality tech commentary. She's thoughtful. She's engaged. She makes good stuff. I very much enjoyed having a sit down conversation with her, and I've enjoyed following her channel after that point, where I think she's making awesome stuff. And at the same time, I just recently started striking up more of a conversation with Scott at Technically Speaking. He's another YouTuber. He's been at the grind for, what, I think 5 years now, 4 years, something like that. And again, makes thoughtful, engaging commentary. He somehow got an early scoop on the Pixel 4a. I was super jealous about that. But I had the pleasure of being one of the judges for a Saturday Night Tech Fight, and just was so charmed by Scott. He's just a really fun guy to produce some content with, especially in such a high stakes battle royale style debate video stream on a Saturday night. So Jacqueline, I wanted to diversify her content creation and started a podcast, and she named her podcast Technically Speaking. Well, if we go back and we look at Scott's channel, his channel is called Technically Speaking. So this is a frustrating reality of working online. There are so few. I mean, you would think that this wouldn't be as difficult. Oh, come up with an original name. Why? You got to copy the name. Even if you were to search and you were to look, if she has no relationship with Scott, they've never worked together or something like that, you see a channel with 16,000 subscribers on it. And so she named her podcast Technically Speaking with Jacqueline. And I forget who her co-host is, but, you know, like, she made an effort to differentiate the name of her podcast from any other similar YouTube productions or platforms. There is, no other established brand or show exactly like that. And of course, nerds on Twitter were totally understanding of the complications of being a content creator and gently suggested corrections. I'm absolutely being facetious. I feel like Jacqueline took the brunt of some really nasty commentary directed her way and was basically kind of put on the attack from people that felt they needed to defend the honor of Scott over it, Technically Speaking. And honestly, here's the deal. I'm almost positive I'm preaching to the choir here. If you're watching my podcast or listening to my podcast, I doubt many of you went out of your way to try and savage Jacqueline. Like, I'm feeling pretty good about my audience being just a hair more considerate than the average tech Twitter armchair pundit. Monday morning quarterback. There is no situation where that kind of response or that kind of defense of someone is really warranted. Trying to cast aspersions on the motives of someone like Jacqueline is not a good look. And it definitely showcases the ignorance of Jacqueline's platform, her reach, the amount of work, the hustle that she puts into her content, to act like she's doing something nefarious or trying to take something away from Scott is an indefensible position to maintain. And no one asked for it. Scott's a grown-up, and content production, copyright, trademark, whether or not Technically Speaking is even trademarked, this stuff is complicated. But Scott's a good guy. And if he felt he had been wronged, as a grown-up, he is perfectly capable of approaching Jacqueline and working something out. What absolutely does not help this situation is sending angry and hateful tweets Jacqueline's way. That doesn't fix anything. That doesn't help anything. And it doesn't improve Scott's channel. In fact, I would wager quite the opposite. If that visibility is being occupied by mostly angry and hateful people on Twitter, that's probably not the audience Scott's looking to maintain. There's a bunch of people saying, oh man, did you see what Jacqueline did to you, bruh? I almost guarantee that is not what Scott is looking to do. And so what became a non-issue got blown up over several days as Jacqueline had to run interference and play defense when at the time she's just trying to promote and launch a podcast. That's the worst look for us, and we should be able to do better than that. I gotta tell you, it is not fun when you're on the defensive for trying to create something. Hold on, let me take a sip of water here. It's really frustrating. So I am some gadget guy. I have had to defend some gadget guy against numerous small repair shops that use the word gadget or gadget guy in some form or fashion. I don't want to name them specifically because legal stuff is gross, and I'd rather not have to deal with lawyers talking about me conflating my substantially larger social media platform as a confusion for other people that own and operate trademarks that are in no way confusable with my social media platforms. It takes up a disgusting amount of time. And when someone comes at you that aggressively, you know, you're not really looking to come up with some kind of amicable solution. It's not how this stuff works. Where Jacqueline and Scott probably just needed to hash it out over an email or three, instead, now you've got two people with their backs up being made examples of and are on the defensive. So you're not helping. When you know, I've had issues with my content being stolen or people trying to utilize similar sounding social media profiles and names, and you know, I am not a huge content creator by any stretch of the imagination, but even for the impact it's had on my time, my mental health, my productivity, it's awful. So I feel for both of them.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
I'm not sure that this even could have been a necessary, like a preventable situation. All Jacqueline had to do was search for the term, technically speaking. What makes you think she didn't? Again, there's a certain tier of visibility, whatever her search results might have brought up, you know, whether or not this was a platform, whether or not this was a blog, whether or not it's a YouTube channel versus a podcast. This is complicated stuff. And when you're excited to make something new, when you're excited to contribute to this conversation, you know, it's easy to run full steam into this one direction. You're like, I looked it up on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, and like, I didn't see where I was stepping on anyone's toes. That's so simple to grok. Like, we shouldn't be shocked by that. It's not a difficult thing to understand. But of course, the angry response and this sort of like, you know, passionate defense. Again, there's this sick thrill we have in tearing people down. And that's really most of what I saw from the more heightened and aggressive replies. To be fair, there were numerous people who said, like, hey, we would have concerns. Have you reached out to Scott? Is there something going on? That I feel is totally appropriate. But again, there's also this righteous indignation where someone made a mistake on the internet and now I can say the most awful things I want to her. And you're like, that had nothing to do with defending Scott, and it had everything to do with getting off on abuse. And that's what we got to curtail. So from the last one woke, I've seen people try to talk to her. Her response was like, oh, well, and that caused a lot of the uproar. If you go back and look at her tweets, she's trying to address some of those situations. And it sounds like there might have been some communication behind the scenes between her and Scott, or at least some consideration for, hey, we tried to do this and he tried to do that. And that's how it worked out. It's still no one else's business but theirs. Again, it's how many Twitter replies does she have to be, you know, fully engaged, and maybe her mistake was trying to reply to too many Twitter replies, but she's watching this new podcast get eaten alive in the court of public opinion for tech tubers. So I'm not surprised that at some point her replies probably became more cavalier, but she also went through threads of replies where she was explaining in greater detail what the situation was. If someone couldn't be bothered to look up what her responses really were,
I have little sympathy for them getting a more casual tone in some of their replies. The last one woke gadget guy. Oh man. It's frustrating because it's really what we've talked about before on other episodes of this podcast is just approaching other people with a little bit more tech empathy. It's not even about being woke. It's just trying to say like, hey, I see what you're trying to do there. I feel for you. Tech Lovin' Mama. I spent several months to come up with my name, and after making mine, someone made a similar for Tech Space 2. I was not happy about it, but I moved on. I didn't choose a widely used phrase either. It's rough. It really is. When we were producing the movie review show, we purposely used an obnoxiously long but kind of general phrase. The name of our show was Movies You May Have Missed. And like into our main production run, we were getting like 2 or 3 million downloads a month. And people would still be like, oh, and that name, the name of the movies you missed or movies you should not miss. Or what's the name of your show again? Like I'm in the middle of an interview and they don't know what the name of my show is, but I'm there to talk about the show. And it's hilarious. But it was a commonly searched for phrase. And we had a number of imitators when we launched, you know, movies you don't want to miss. I remember was one that died super, super fast. And this stuff is all like gone to the how fragile our online media is. This stuff isn't easy. So at least that's what I'm hoping to convey. And I have every hope and every expectation that the folks who participate with me, who engage with me, who chat with me, again, likely not those out there, maybe sharing concerns. I feel like that's fair, but you aren't owed a response when you're trying to reach out to content creators who are in the middle of actively trying to examine what the situation might be. So, you know, it's tricky and it's frustrating and it's ugly and it's messy. How the sausage gets made is really messy. So I would hope that maybe in the future when we see some kind of meltdown like this, that those of us, especially in this live chat right now, those of you listening to the audio version of this podcast after the fact, that maybe we can be the people to walk in and say, hey, just chill out, take a time out, ding, back to your corners. There's nothing is being served. Nothing is being made better by this level of aggressive agitation. So I would hope that we could all be the sort of mediator style energy for these types of situations. That's enough talking about this. I was more upset by this than I think I should be. But having been on both sides of situations where people make accusations about what it is that you're trying to do that really don't properly convey what it is that you're trying to do. So Tech Lovin' Mama. I was super new to it all when I first found out, but now I'm like, eh, whatever, you're not me. Like even with YouTube's new tools for, you know, watching my content get ripped off, it's still like it's a tsunami of people ripping off my videos. I can't spend that much time on it. I just have to kind of live with the fact that I can't make a movie review show on YouTube, but other people seem to be fine monetizing my videos on their channels because I can't fight it anymore. YouTube is awful. So moving right along. It seems like this is all largely getting sorted out. So I have nothing but the best hopes for Jacqueline and Scott on their respective tech journeys. Let's knock out some news. These are mostly going to be follow-ups to some of the stories that we've been covering for a while. So I'm going to try and blast through this because I want to spend the second half of this podcast. I don't want this podcast to be another 2.5-3 hour podcast. So I'm going to go into screen share. We're going to move real quick, but please, if you've got questions or there are things that you want to like you know, sort of chime in with, then we'll try and break out for some conversations. Well, the last one, woke. I really do appreciate that. Well, this is why you need a community that watches your back. When I see people's content that I support get ripped off, I report it. I appreciate that. What's frustrating is I get a page on YouTube where they show me the thousands of copycat uploads. And again, it's like I have to go manually through a process of trying to get them to remove that content. YouTube does not afford me the same kind of content ID tools that larger channels get, where that becomes a more automated process. Where, you know, for me, it's innocent until proven guilty. And I have to go and make the case, this is my content, you can see it's from this video, please remove it from your platform. The flip side is, if I were to do a movie review show, even under the auspices of fair use and commentary and critique, I would be guilty until proven innocent. And that's, again, you can't ever really be proven innocent on YouTube. Stephanie Young Pratt. Sorry I joined late. Basically, someone is piggybacking off of you? Not someone. I've produced, what, like 1,200 videos on YouTube? I believe I'm somewhere around 2,200 copied, re-uploaded, and monetized videos on other people's channels. So it's great. It's awesome. I'm totally empowered to protect my copyright on YouTube, but not at all. All right. News. So, number one, remember a little while back we were talking about antitrust violations with Amazon and Apple and Google and Facebook. We're seeing a lot of activity on that front. The big story is obviously Apple versus Epic, but I had to start off with this little Amazon story. California court rules Amazon can be liable for defective goods sold on its marketplace. There is one critical quote in here from the court. Let me highlight this. Whatever term we use to describe Amazon's role, be it retailer, distributor, or merely facilitator, it was pivotal in bringing the product here to the consumer. Excuse me. Under established principles of strict liability, Amazon should be held liable if a product sold through its website turns out to be defective. The court said Amazon also can't be shielded from liability through Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. That is huge. We've been talking about Section 230 for a while now on this podcast, months now. This is the shield law where a media outlet of some form which redistributes content can't be held liable for the content posted from a user, subscriber, a publisher. They're trying to have this both ways. You know, YouTube cannot directly be sued for someone uploading something terrible to YouTube. The way that our legal system moves through the relationship and the balance of that is very complicated. Again, I'm going to throw out Legal Eagle DJ. The Legal Eagle YouTube channel has an amazing video. It's like a 20-minute video on Section 230. This is a pillar of how we operate online, and it probably needs some kind of reform. But Amazon has been trying to say, we are merely a facilitator. We help consumers find manufacturers, and that's what we do. We're not making this product. We're not really selling this product. We're just opening up a marketplace for people to find each other. And now a court is saying that doesn't vibe. A retail channel like Amazon should not be able to hide behind Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act when actual product is being moved through their service. That is a very big shot at the sort of entrenched business model of Amazon. So that's kind of a big deal. Again, for my, you know, for how much I nerd out on the law, tech law is getting me all worked up and Twitter-pated right now. That's a biggie. We need, I'm almost positive there's going to be some kind of appeal. Of course, Amazon's representatives are saying, they've completely missed the point on what Amazon is. This is absolutely one that we need to keep an eye on. Dave Bonine, YouTube is the Klingon judge in the undiscovered country. Guilty. Rurapente. I believe his name was Robert Easton. He was a dialect coach that I got to work with when I was a voiceover casting director. All right. Another quick follow-up. This is just, the news block is all about lawsuits. Just lots of lawsuits. 9to5Mac, who wrote this up? Ben Lovejoy over at 9to5Mac. Apple countersues stereo headphone inventor Koss with interesting twist. So hold on. Patently, Apple reports that Koss met several times with Apple, these meetings taking place under a confidentiality agreement. Under the terms of that agreement, neither party could use anything they learned in the meeting for the purposes of litigation. Apple says this is exactly what Koss has done. In 2017, Koss sought out Apple in a purported attempt to engage in licensing discussions. Despite Apple's request that all discussions be conducted without restriction, Koss insisted that the parties enter into a written confidentiality agreement. The parties ultimately signed such an agreement with an effective date of August 6, 2017. According to the terms of the confidentiality agreement, while the agreement was in force, Apple could not advise a court of Koss's threats to file baseless infringement claims or ask a court to declare Apple's rights and resolve the legal uncertainty it faced. The confidentiality agreement also restricted how Apple could disclose and use the evidence and contents of the discussions. But the agreement also protected Apple. Koss was not permitted to later use the fact that Apple had agreed to a discussion with Koss on the contents of the discussion against Apple in litigation. We talked about this a couple weeks back. Koss, classic headphone manufacturer, suing Apple over a couple of patents and designs, especially for wireless connectivity for audio playing devices. And it would seem that how Koss filed that lawsuit breached their confidentiality agreement. So the drama just keeps on getting more dramatic. Again, another one to keep an eye on how this might play out. Again, going after Apple will set a legal precedent where I'm pretty confident Koss could go after a number of smaller headphone manufacturers. And we'll have to see if this intellectual property that they're trying to defend is ruled by courts to be worthy of protecting, that they have made substantial enough contributions to the world of audio manufacturing that they should be able to protect that IP and charge licensing for things that I'm pretty confident we take for granted on most mobile audio platforms. At the same time, they now have to face Apple's lawyers, the juggernaut, what is Apple, over a $1 trillion company on the stock market. So that should be hilarious. excuse me. My voice is super raw. Simon says, Hypno, the twist is that Apple then guy costs and write it off. Oh, buy costs. Okay. Yeah, there was a typo there. I would imagine Apple probably could make this go away pretty quickly. And just keep the IP after selling off parts of the company. The last one woke. Wouldn't a lot of that stuff fall under fair use? So they cannot block Apple. They just have to pay. Fair use is very difficult to prove. Again, you don't really have fair use as such in intellectual property dispute. What you would have to claim is that what they're trying to protect in terms of IP is so universally, like it's an idea that is so generally acceptable that numerous companies would have gotten there without Koss's direct contributions. And Koss is trying to claim, we got here through this specific path, and a number of other companies seem to follow a very similar path, so we should get royalties for our contributions. And Apple, I'm pretty confident Apple's going to claim, how cost got here is kind of immaterial. Every other audio manufacturer on the planet has arrived at similar solutions for these types of situations. So we'll have to see how that plays out. It's, again, to split hairs. Fair use wouldn't necessarily be, I think, the argument in terms of an intellectual property dispute. It's just a little bit more nuanced than that. I see. So essential IP, so they cannot block Apple, but generally Apple would have to pay for the IP. Again, again, Koss is trying to say, you know, we deserve some type of licensing arrangement or remuneration for our contributions to mobile audio. But of course, the biggie, the one that I do want to spend a little time on in our news block, the huge showdown. Like I said, this is just a lawsuit-heavy, legalese-heavy week. And I think the big news, the biggest story of the last week was Epic Games. Epic Games going after app stores. So, I mean, I'm going to share a link with Screen Rant because I think it's a pretty good, like, boil it down to just major bullet points kind of an article just to get you up to speed. But Epic Games, they make Fortnite. And Fortnite's business model depends on, you know, microtransactions, skins and seasons and subscription passes and just fun things that sort of keep the developers funding and fueling very regular updates to the game. But, I mean, you can go and play it for free if you just want to go and play it for free. And it's pretty much available everywhere. PC, consoles, Android, iOS. But the tricky thing about... doing business with Apple is if you have a gaming platform, you cannot circumvent Apple's App Store monetization. So we've seen Apple go head to head with numerous other companies. And anytime there's some kind of in-app purchase, which is mostly just fielded through the relationship between consumer and developer, Apple says, well, there's nowhere else you can go. Your app has to be installed through the App Store. So if there is some other kind of monetization happening, it has to go through the App Store and we have to get a 30% cut. But we can't let you have access to iPhone users to install outside of the App Store. So you either do business with us or we have to take your app off the App Store. And so Epic, this move is pretty brilliant. I don't really have a horse in this race. I'm not predisposed to liking Epic. You know, they're able to engage in this type of legal wrangling because they got a huge back from Tencent, you know, the whatever business relationships might be concerning for you. And I very much agree with some of the rumblings on antitrust investigations for Apple, how Apple runs their App Store. I don't think it's as precious an investigation as, say, how Amazon or Facebook do business in terms of antitrust violations, but we should absolutely be extending the same kind of scrutiny to how Apple monopolizes the iOS ecosystem. But you got to give Epic a ton of credit. So Epic sets up a system where people who play Fortnite can pay directly to Epic. Well, that runs afoul of Apple's terms of service, and Apple predictably pulls Fortnite, blocked from the App Store, yanked it, it's gone. And literally, the second that happened, where Fortnite was not available on the App Store, Epic has a lawsuit ready to go, it's filed, and they've got this really cute video, which I'm not going to play here because it might wreck, you know, again, my content ID. You were just talking about, if I play this Epic video on my live stream, and then I try and upload this podcast to YouTube, YouTube will hit me with a content ID match and probably demonetize my channel again. That doesn't happen to other people when they rip off my content, but it will happen to me if I restream someone else's video. given up the trade secrets, it's why when I need to show a video in one of my videos, it's always almost always playing at a weird angle from a phone screen. Because if I just show you the video, I get wrecked. It doesn't happen to other people. Other people get to monetize my stuff all the time. But me, no. That's bad. I'm super bitter is the problem. All right. But they hosted this viewing event where they sort of reshot a satirical 1984 video. It's called 1984 Tonight. This is the iconic Apple commercial where a woman in hot pants runs into a 1984 dystopian video viewing room and throws a sledgehammer into a screen all about getting away from the totalitarianism of IBM computers. And now Fortnite is satirically taking a stab at that because these business practices from Apple are under a lot of scrutiny. They are the big developer in this fight. Facebook recently also just filed something similar. I don't know if it was a lawsuit, but there were rumblings about Facebook where developers who produce content through Facebook still have to engage in monetization and add, again, sort of a fee structure through Apple App Store. So when a developer comes up with something for Facebook and someone uses it on an iPhone and they pay for it, that developer then has to say, like, get a cut from Apple. Then they have to go through Facebook's business model, and then they get much less. So again, Facebook is being very honorable and fighting for their developers too. While I'm sure it's more about just protecting their own monetization structure and fee structure for developers who produce on Facebook. Again, I'm not even less noble than Epic. But this could be kind of heady. I mean, we are at a something of a crossroad. What does the Apple App Store look like when their developers have some kind of leverage for doing business with Apple? I very much doubt that we're going to see a near-term future where Apple opens up the ability to sideload iOS applications outside of the App Store. I think they will fight any challenge to that up to the Supreme Court if they have to take it that far. But they will prevent any type of open access to iOS or iPadOS. And pretty soon, probably macOS. You know, again, when we start looking at Apple moving over to an ARM instruction set processor, one of the things that's going to be a huge perk for Apple is being better able to lock down programs for macOS and prevent the same kind of legacy application support. So, and, you know, at the same time, and I want to, you know, make this clear too. You know, when Epic made this change where you could monetize outside of the App Store, Google did the same thing. Google pulled Fortnite from the Play Store on Android. And this is written up by Richard Lawler on Engadget. So in the app, you could see a Fortnite direct payment or a Google Play Store payment. So if you were fine giving Epic your pay credentials, you know, like say you wanted to give them your own credit card number, one of the things they did to really push this issue was offer a discount. So if you got 1,000 V-Bucks, it would cost you $9.99 going through the Play Store, or it would cost you $7.99 going direct to Epic. This is obviously in breach of Google's terms of service, and Google pulled the app and Epic filed a lawsuit with them too. But the issue is a little less precious in Android land because that's how Fortnite got their start. Fortnite on Android started as a third-party APK. You would have to sideload. You would have to install it directly. You couldn't go through Google Play to get Fortnite. And now it just kind of seems like we're kind of back to that. But right on the heels of a new season of Fortnite, iOS gaming, you know, Fortnite is kind of a big deal. It's hard to minimize the impact that games like Fortnite have had. Fortnite and PUBG have had on the world of mobile gaming, where now we're seeing a ton of, you know, solutions for, you know, COD, Fortnite, PUBG, Battle Royale, interactive gameplay, and our phones are more than capable of doing this well. So it could be kind of interesting. Apple is already under congressional crosshairs. The Judiciary Committee was mostly focused on their App Store policies when Tim Cook was under oath. And now we've got a major player, someone who can actually fund a decently combative lawsuit against Apple rising up. I don't know that they're the champion that mobile developers deserve, but maybe they're the champion they need right now. I don't know. It's kind of messy. From Pat Produce, I wonder if PUBG would face any issues like Fortnite. And again, as soon as this starts getting worked out in a court of law, the biggie is going to be how do other app developers look at their monetization structure, and how do they verify purchases, and how are they allowed to do business? You own an iPhone. A part of that is, well, you have the App Store and Apple protects you from malware. And the other part of that is Apple is your gatekeeper, and Apple dictates what software you can use and how you can use it. Someone who's into Fortnite on an iPhone probably cares about that distinction in that relationship, and likely doesn't view Apple as a significant contributor to the regular monetization that they might pour into that game. And from Fat Produce, PUBG is really happy to see Fortnite off of Android and iOS, I would wager. Again, like PUBG and COD Mobile are probably, you know, that gif of dude rubbing his hands from behind a tree. Come play over here on this side. But on Android, again, I doubt this is going to be for the really hardcore Fortnite players on Android. They're going to sideload. They're just going to go back to how they got it, you know, originally. From the last one, woke. Also imagine this. Years ago, you want Google and Apple to protect you from your child running up a credit card bill. Now consumers want that to go away because Epic wants to be in charge of billing. So if we run into another issue, who do we get mad at, Google and Apple or Epic? Well, I mean, part of the reason why we're looking at how all of this stuff gets monetized is because Google and Apple, I think they pay token lip service to how they try to protect people from predatory microtransactions. They make it very difficult to see what kind of monetization a game has. You cannot filter very easily on Google Play or on the Apple App Store on what type of in-app purchases. Like, I should have a checkbox to say, I only want to see games that offer one-time in-app purchases. Like, I can play the game for free, and then I can pay $4.99 and unlock the full game or remove ads. That's all I want to see. I am increasingly less impressed with the quality of gaming where it's resource management, and then you got to get these crystals, and then you got to get gold, and then you got to throw all this into a wood chipper, and maybe you get the upgrade for your character. I mean, all of that stuff is in my opinion, gambling. It random number generated player progression is basically just slot machine gambling, and you chew up a significant amount of grind or a ton of real world money to accomplish that. And Google and Apple have not empowered consumers to protect any consumers from that style of business practice if they want to avoid it. It's not even about protecting the kids. You know, if you go and fire up a game like Marvel Future Fight, the whales in that game spend thousands of dollars on character upgrades every month. Every major update for that game is a flurry of super huge whales spending thousands to update rosters. It's incredible. And if you want to play just like even on, because what I used to do, they had a subscription, you know, for $3.99 or $4.99, I can't remember. Every month you'd get like a little gem pack, and that could go a huge way towards, you know, unlocking some character upgrade tools. And then I was really playing, you know, I was playing every day. So I had a lot of material coming in that I could use to upgrade individual characters. The roster of over 200 characters, you can easily drop $400 or $500 and still not max out a single character. Like, not even be close. So, I mean, again, I know a lot of this, and when you talk about gaming, it's like, oh, we got to protect the kids. Google and Apple aren't protecting the kids because they get 30%. They get 30%. You want to spend $100, $99.99 on gems that you can burn through in 10 minutes on Marvel Future Fight? Apple and Google are going to get $30. Do you think they have any incentive in throwing cold water on that? I guarantee you they do not. So what we need instead is some kind of outside regulatory agency or reaction to that so that we can start changing some of that behavior. Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey, what's going on, Juan, and all of you tuned in to today's show. I'm Nick Gray from Fandroid. I've known Juan for quite a few years now, and you may have actually heard my voice from back in the day when Juan used to host the Pocket Now Weekly. If you're not familiar with Fandroid, we were actually the very first Android news site to hit the web, publishing our very first article within hours of Google making their announcement about their mobile operating system. Of course, a lot has changed since then, but we're still here covering the news, reviewing new gadgets, and of course, sharing our passion for Android with anyone who wants to join in. You can find all of our work on Fandroid.com. That's Phandroid.com. But if you love video, and I'm sure you do since you're listening to Juan's podcast, be sure to check us out at YouTube.com/Fandroid as well. And that's going to do it. Juan, thanks for featuring us. Back to you.
This is one of the things, like, why I'm not necessarily... So I belong to Halo 2, has two comments here on Periscope. Rene Ritchie has a good video on this. To me, it honestly doesn't look good what Epic did, especially after going as long as they did, agreeing with the term set. First of all, Rene Ritchie is my favorite Apple fan, but he's also an Apple fan. I mean, I really do enjoy Rene Ritchie's commentary, and I learn things about Apple products because I'm not as big an Apple fan as he is. But that's also a part of what goes into a conversation like this. I don't really feel Epic is a sympathetic player in this space. Oh, woe is Epic, and I feel bad for them. What's exciting is, what is the future of the legal precedent set? Because there's going to be a huge argument at stake. Does Apple have competition? Because according to someone like Rene Ritchie, he's going to flip sides on that answer as to whether or not it benefits Apple. If the conversation is, does Apple have competition for people who own iOS devices to buy software from anywhere else? The answer is no. If the question is, does Apple have competition by you being able to leave iOS and buy an Android device? Then the answer is, of course, Apple has competition. That is a very interesting and intricate legal question to examine. What is competition? Apple is, again, an over $1 trillion company on the stock market. They're not the number one manufacturer in any region or market, but they do sell, like, especially here in North America, they do sell often the number one ranked individual devices in their tiers. You know, again, Android is 75% of the global market. Yeah, but Android isn't one company. Apple is. So Apple stands as being one of the top sellers, and here in the United States often represents the top seller. So we have to look at what is monopolistic business practices as it pertains to one entity capturing 40% of the smartphone market, not allowing any competition. Now, remember how upset we got back in the day when Microsoft had a web browser built into Windows, and that how anti-competitive that was. I mean, sure, you could own a Mac or you could buy a Linux computer. You didn't have to use Windows. But the dominant interaction for people just getting onto the internet was Internet Explorer and how tragic and awful that was, that Microsoft forced you to use their own web browser out of the box. That's the gig. So again, I mean, I absolutely appreciate Rene Ritchie's take on this is probably a little kinder to Apple than mine is. But if the interaction is Epic runs servers, people play on Epic servers, and that the main interaction is Apple forces you to install Fortnite on your phone, and then they're done. After handle updates. So whenever there's an update, that also goes through an Apple server. But that's it. I don't see where Apple's contributions really warrant 30% on every single microtransaction and season fee. You know, so if there's any opportunity for someone to, you know, maintain that relationship directly with their consumers, I think legally they should be allowed to examine the potential of that. They need to be held to a critically high standard where, you know, if you're introducing another portal through which someone might be able to compromise a mobile device, there needs to be a buyer beware there. But, you know, the bulk of this, the heavy lifting of this is fronted by Epic servers. Apple doesn't deserve 30% of maintaining every consumer interaction between Epic and their customers. I don't see it. But that's where now the courts need to get involved here. So the courts need to determine, is the Apple App Store monopolistic business? And I guarantee you, the huge argument is going to be Apple consumers are free to leave Apple anytime they want, if they want competition. All you just sell your iPhone, give up on iOS, get rid of all of your App Store purchases, get rid of all of your iTunes movie rentals. You can transfer your Apple Music subscription, so don't worry about that. But just get rid of everything and just go buy an Android. And there you go. Now you've got competition if you want to sideload an app and pay Fortnite directly. See? There's no monopoly here. We're not engaging in any anti-consumer behavior. There's plenty of competition. So, that's my feeling. The last one woke. People forget what all Microsoft had to do to get out of that antitrust suite. Microsoft had to stand up Apple financially, put Office on Mac, plus open up their systems to other browsers. In the EU, they forced a browser splash screen. Because, I mean, let's be honest, like, I love Edge as a PDF reader. I use Firefox as my main browser. But in the EU, Windows had to have like a pop-up, you know, like, oh, I see you've installed Windows. What web browser would you like to use? And then you would select from there. That was it. But yeah, we acted like that was a huge travesty, and it still has colored the perception of Microsoft for generations after. One more comment on this, because I really like this one from the last. I think Apple Google is going to win the little battles. I feel they will lose the war. These Congress members are underinformed on tech. They're going to screw up the techist sphere. I really feel the tone on this is changing. I did a 5-hour stream for that Judiciary Committee, and I would say it was probably 1 out of 3 members on that Judiciary Committee who were asking phenomenally well-designed questions. I mean, it's frustrating because 2 out of 3 members on the committees were asking really dumb questions. But the tides on this are turning. You know, there's a generational play happening. And then on top of that, you know, these are easy ways for elected officials to make a splash or make a mark. So they're getting savvier. From where we were during the first Mark Zuckerberg hearing to where we are now is radically different in terms of questioning, approach, investigation, data, and the legalese that's being employed here, they're probably 10 years late to the party, but they're starting to catch up on some really interesting dynamics between consumers, data, and services. And that's where this stuff could be really interesting. Again, like taking it back to Epic versus Apple and Epic versus Google, I don't really care about Epic. But what's going to be critical is when we go through these lawsuits, what are the legal precedents that will be set? And especially, you know, again, the Epic Apple fight is going to be more public. But the Epic Google fight is going to contribute to that conversation in a very interesting way, too. Because, again, Google operates Android with the idea that the vast majority of people will never sideload an app. And so there is a momentum and a weight of business, a pressure of doing business in a very specific way to keep Google happy. And one of the things that we've heard, I mean, even from Tim Cook, is the rules on this are not always as consistently applied between different developers as these, as Apple and Google would like us to think. So there needs to be some kind of regulatory insight, not even regulatory action, just literally regulatory insight on how these companies do business and how the courts rule is going to change our relationships with these app developer platforms for the next generation of products and services. Dave Burns, I think 10 years is generous. it was about 10 years ago we were talking about the internet being a series of tubes and how charmingly out of touch that was. So Simon says, Hypno, hello, Tom Apple from MySpace. How do I attach a smiley face to the chat snap? Tom, I keep you in my top eight. I'm down with it. All right. We're going to close out the news block here. I'm only 20 minutes over. Oh, James Vale, this is a great question. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I'm sorry, man. Hey, Juan, I would love to hear your thoughts on the latest news on Huawei license expiring and the impacts. We kind of talked about this a little last week. Huawei losing out on x86 fabrication and that the last generation of Kirin chipsets are out. So while I would love to kind of dig deep into that again, and we will be talking about Intel after the subreddit plug, I'm going to point you to a previous episode of the podcast where we did kind of deal with some of that. So one last little piece of news. Apple versus Epic was the biggest news story of last week, but this one is the most important. I do not cover a lot of gaming news on my channel. I mean, I save a lot of my gaming discussion and commentary for when I'm producing with Newegg. That way I don't have to do everything twice. But this one hit really close to home. I'm sure everyone who has any connection to gaming in the slightest is likely as distraught as I am. I am, of course, talking about another delay to Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2. This is a game that one of the only games I've ever pre-ordered. It was announced last year, was supposed to be out this year, and now it's not going to be out until 2021. And I'm sure that all of you are as crestfallen as I am. I was really looking forward to building up a Nosferatu, maybe also playing again with a Tremere. If they do, I'm hoping that there's some opportunity for an expansion with like the La Sombra. It's a terrible situation to be in. And, I don't know that my soul could have been crushed more. So it's very upset. I hope that, Simon says, Hypno, screw you. That was funny. Duke Nukem for Fang Bangers. Oh, no. Oh, that cracked me up. That shouldn't have been as funny as it was. Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 1. Great game. I mean, obviously, graphics super outdated, and the play style is wonky at best. But, like, People talk about like being into Pokemon or Magic the Gathering or tabletop RPGs. Vampire was my jam. I refused to LARP. I was not a LARPer. But yeah, both the tabletop and the card game. I have a storage unit with like crates of Vampire and Jihad cards, and they're kind of amazing. And I miss this property being as much a part of my life as it was. Like when Lex gets a little older, I'm going to have to break those decks out and be like, this is how you play a collectible card game. Lex, your dad's a nerd. I hate to break it to you. So, yes, very upset by this. I'm keeping the pre-order in. I want this game so bad. It is what it is. I'd rather the game be good and delayed than bad and rushed. So there we go. All right, just a real quick, we're gonna kind of blitz through the last one. Yu-Gi-Oh! I got a dragon. It's got blue eyes or something. Arr. Every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no different. Some subreddits are about sharing news and clips or being a cool place to hang out. Mine is trying to help bridge the gap for content creators who deserve more attention. If you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you will find a collection of articles and videos, all submitted by people who deserve more attention. If it's the YouTube algorithm, if it's Google search engine optimization, if it's Facebook, if it's anything that might manipulate your feed, you will find a broader and healthier collection of tech topics to enjoy. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Looking at the top picks, number one this last week, painfully honest tech, watch this before you buy the Galaxy Note 20 or Note 20 Ultra. Jason is he's also going through something of a reformat for his own YouTube channel, but his editorial and his commentary videos have just been killing it lately. Some really great stuff from Jason at Painfully Honest Tech. Number two, get the best fit for your in-ear buds, #2020 hearing from some gadget guy. And number three, Netflix fix your Android app. So this is why I'm excited. So last week on the subreddit, one of my videos was the number one and number two spot on Glowing Rectangles. This week, I did not take the top spot on my subreddit. I am not the winner of my subreddit. This is not a me subreddit. But I did get second and third place. Silver and bronze. Silver and bronze. And you see, Matt Tyler is even celebrating this as a victory. Finally, Juan's been knocked off the top spot. We just can't downvote you hard enough on your own subreddit. Oh, I hate you all. I love you all. It's so good. No more Juan. No more Juan. So moving right along in the, what is that? Number four spot, is the Samsung ecosystem worth it? And this is kind of an interesting little video. I gotta pull this up over, where did it go? Oh, no, I clicked on it. There it is. From Tech PhD, 375 subscribers, a video with 180 views. And this guy put together a really savvy look at his own usage of a Galaxy Note 9 and a Galaxy Watch and Galaxy Buds and trying to judge whether or not there's an ecosystem there. Number five, the Velvet First Impressions, coming by way of Jason on Painfully Honest Tech. We've got Erica Griffin, the Nintendo DSi XL, still worth it in 2020. A look back at some classic gaming hardware. We've got Grant S. looking at the Sony Xperia 1 Mark II versus the iPhone 11 Pro Max and the Galaxy Note 10 in a low-light camera comparison. We've got Spectacular Gadgets looking at the Pixel 4a. And my buddy Board at Work rounding out the top 10. Galaxy Buds Live versus AirPods Pro versus Pixel Buds 2 versus Sony SP800N. A roundup of true wireless earbuds. Some really great stuff for you to check out. We've got TK Bay. We've got OnePlus Buds from LFA Reviews. We've got Lover of Tech. We've got Ben looking at Warp versus Dart charging. We've got Yes Sir, Tana So Lit. And someone posting some thoughts, Preston, posting some thoughts on the Fortnite ban. There was just a wide variety. Thankfully, a lot of audio, some really fun game commentary videos. Trisha Hershberger took a daily top spot looking at this from a video she produced with Newegg, which gaming enemies would you choose to defend you? That was a really fun video. I hope you saw that one. And even our buddy Issa Does Tech, looking at a Dyson hair straightener. Will it burn her hair? And Dave Burns, that video was fire. And I hope you're talking about Issa's video about maybe burning her hair. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. This has become such a wonderful, vibrant little community. We need more people sharing. We need more people. I mean, and sharing off of Reddit, too. You know, again, one of the things about the current model for content distribution is it's super algorithm based. So if you go to YouTube, you're going to see a very manipulated feed of content, very much like Facebook. It's all about trying to maximize how you stay focused on a very, very narrow band of topics, and it's all to manipulate your behavior to keep you on YouTube as long as possible. My argument is, if you have a broader collection of content creators to choose from, you're going to be more entertained by a wider perspective of tech commentary. So I'm putting my time and effort and energy where my mouth is, where my mouth are. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I guarantee you, if you've never been, you'll find someone there who you've never seen before, and they'll become one of your favorite YouTubers. So it's really been good times. Mm-hmm. And we need those upvotes. I know Matt and Sam, they've been putting together a really awesome show called... It's so hard to do that. My streaming setup. I need like a reverse camera so I can like pop that up. But yeah. So I didn't take the top win. I've got some videos coming out this week though. I might claw back another victory. Could be fun. Could be interesting. All right. Why don't we talk about some gadgets and some tech? God, this is going to be like a 2.5 hour podcast again, isn't it? You know, we don't have to spend a lot of time on this. Who's thinking about buying an Intel-powered PC these days? Anyone? I'm doing this on an Intel Thread. I mean, an AMD Threadripper, but I do have an Intel Nook behind my TV, and I do kind of like the Nook. So, someone? Anyone? Kyle Ruggles, AMD FTW. So here's what's going to be interesting. Intel making some really big claims about their next-gen chips. Something to keep your eye on. They're making the argument that they can improve optimization while not necessarily competing on the same type of fabrication. And what they're doing is they're calling this SuperFin technology. So Intel changed how... Well, Intel, this is coming from an Engadget article written up by Devendra Hardawar. Sorry, I mispronounced that name. The transistors that we use in our electronics, Intel is saying they have radically improved their transistor tech. So even though they won't be able to catch AMD for shrinking their chips, their optimizations and improvements in performance will come because of this transistor improvement, so that their 10 nanometer fabrication process should be able to outperform AMD's 7 nanometer tech. So, big claims. I always love a company coming out swinging and trying to compete and trying to do some cool stuff. This will be the fun race, is AMD's chiplet approach, tons and tons of cores on a smaller manufacturing process versus Intel's larger manufacturing process, but potentially more efficient transistor design. And hopefully we'll be seeing them. So this is from the article. SuperFin is a major part of Intel's new Willow Cove core, sits at the heart of its upcoming Tiger Lake laptop processors. So we're hoping we'll see these in a couple of Dells soon. and from there, we'll be able to start judging
the performance impacts. Yeah, we'll have to see. And they also talked about some graphics cards and stuff like that. But that was really, it's Superfin at least looked a little interesting. It wasn't just Dave Burns, 14 nanometer plus, 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 plus. Intel used to be really, like, it was really popular. They'd have this TikTok manufacturing. You know, there'd be a new fabrication process and then a refinement, then a new fabrication process and then a refinement. And now we've been on the same fabrication process for several talks. And it looks like now they're getting away from that model. A lot of their marketing and a lot of their PR recently has been to talk about different types of performance improvements and a sort of a more granular evolution, which makes sense given the fight that they're going to have to wage against AMD on the desktop side and ARM on the mobile side. So it's pretty intense. From Kyle Ruggles, this won't really help with their laptops. The power draw is still going to be a 10 nanometer chip power draw. So we'll have to see if all of these performance improvements do amount to improved, not just improved performance, but improved performance per watt. And that's going to be tricky when you're fighting a 10 nanometer fight versus a 7 nanometer fight. But I don't think Intel is totally out here. It should be interesting to see. They're going to have to work on hybrid processors and mobile processors and low power cores and I don't know. It could be fun. It could be messy. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's Superfin. You'll believe a shark can fly faster than a Threadripper. Simon says Hypno. You're just trying to crack me up and mess up my podcast now. I love it. All right. Another quick little news blip. Because not a lot of people cared about this piece of news, so I feel like I should at least mention it. Google's at least pretending that they care about Wear OS. This is from the Android Developers blog from August 13th. What's happening in Wear OS? We're focusing on the fundamentals. New watches are going to be coming out with Qualcomm Snapdragon 4100 and 4100 Plus chips. And an OTA this fall is going to improve app launch speeds by 20% and give us better at-a-glance support for commonly used interactions and weather and washing your hands. And then there's going to be another bigger update in 2021. So there could also be a path to Android 11 this year for wearables. I feel like Kyle Ruggles, it's dead, Jim. I still like my Tick watch. I still feel like that was one of the best bang for buck smartwatches you could pick up. If they could optimize Wear OS to improve performance, that would be a huge perk. From the Snapdragon 2100 and 3100 chips, they didn't really get any more powerful. So if you shop a watch with a 2100, you lose out on just a little bit of better low power management. But if you got a Tick watch, you had the whole second screen that saved way more power than the Snapdragon 3100 could. So if you could improve performance by 20% on some of these older watches, that would be really nice. I would very much enjoy that. But it's just been frustrating how little software attention Wear OS as a platform has gotten. So I don't know. You know, even in light of EU regulators getting in the way of the Fitbit acquisition, and there are a couple new watches coming out. We heard word, you know, Fossil is probably going to come out with a new series of watches, even though they just liquidated their Misfit lineup. I want Google to be competitive with wearable technology, and I just don't see how they can be until we see the same kind of attention for this software platform as we do other platforms. You know, I have every expectation that major updates get to my Apple Watch in a timely fashion. I have to believe Samsung does a better job sprucing up the software on Galaxy watches. It would be nice if my Wear OS kit didn't feel so completely ignored, except for like like a rubber band snap of a major update. And then goodbye. We'll see you again in another 18 months when we have another major update. Enjoy. It's just not the feeling you want with how expensive this stuff is. You know, these watches are going to be as expensive as Pixel 4As. We're going to talk about $300 smartwatches. Maybe instead you just buy a Pixel 3A and you get like a wrist strap and you wear it like a corsage. And you're like, this is a way more capable smartwatch than what I can get with Android Wear. I love it. Oh, it's so funny. And from, who is this? Osakura Aku? I hope there are more fossil hybrid style smartwatches in the market. I really need to get my hands on one of those Withings. I never got to play with one of the Withings hybrids. Those look pretty cool too. Aditi Anil, don't Casio make smartwatches? Yeah, I mean, like there are other players out there. I mean, Garmin. The Garmin watches are actually pretty cool too. Pixel 3a on an armband. Like I made jokes like the Palm. You remember that little Palm phone? It was teeny tiny. I never got my hands on one. I should really try and find one. To me, that was a pocket smartwatch or a smart pocket watch. You know, you keep it. It's a teeny little, you know, just glance at a glance, minor brief interactions. It's not on your wrist, so it's not as convenient as a worn smartwatch. A lot of this is just how cranky I've been now that my focals are dead. Because smart glasses are better than smart watches in every way. The focals were incredible for keeping interactions with tech at eye level and never having to like touch anything. So much cooler. I felt like I was living in the future, and then that was taken away from me, and I'm kind of bitter pants with Google about that. So, why don't we wrap this up? Kyle Ruggles, your focals are dead? Yeah, that was a major story I kind of complained about a little while back. The focals got bought out by Google, and for a pittance. It was $20 million deal? Maybe not even that much. But yeah, they've already pulled the plug on the server side. So basically, they're just fancy paperweights, really heavy sunglasses that I can wear. They don't work anymore. So, yeah, not great. The OMG with 4 exclamation points is totally deserved. The major gadgety news, obviously a bunch of Galaxy Note videos are going live now. And we talked about the Galaxy Note last week, where obviously the Pixel 4a is a superior phone, price performance in every way to what Samsung has to offer. The big news of the last week was finally getting pre-order and pricing for the Surface Duo. Yeah, everyone's super excited about the Surface Duo, right? Yeah, look at that. Two screens. Who could think at that speed? So Surface Duo, more storage than we were expecting. And let me just break into the tech specs here. Because everyone was saying, oh, it's only going to have 64 gigabits, and it has 128. So there you go. Now it's a done deal. Now it's an insta-buy. But I got beat up pretty hard on Twitter after this pre-order went live. Because it's going to be a $1,400 phone. That is crazy pricey phone. But it's really not. The thing is, I'm going to be really frustrated. I actually wrote to one of the PR agencies that kind of handle some of the Microsoft stuff, because I don't have a Microsoft contact. I've tried to reach out. There was like a last Hail Mary pass, like trying to reach someone in Microsoft just to strike up a conversation. I used to have a really good relationship with Microsoft during the Windows Phone days, but those are all gone now. And I pretty much just laid it out there. These are exactly the criticisms you're going to see. You're going to give this phone to major YouTube channels and they're going to pan it, and they're going to not review what it is. They're going to review what it isn't. And they're going to harp on one or two things. You know, like, oh, well, NFC, well, that's a deal breaker. Or the battery, The battery only lasted me all day. It didn't last me 2 days. Business travelers need 4 days of battery life. They're going to cherry pick a couple of these, or the Snapdragon. Oh, the 855. That's terrible. No one's maxing out the 845 with apps or services, but who could use this garbage chip with the 855? And I broke it all down. And I probably pissed off people internal at Microsoft. But it's the same conversations that I've had with people internal at LG and Sony. Is right now, I would not be approaching techies. The people who would be most excited normally to talk about boundary pushing design, progressive new tech, how exciting I think this form factor is, how much I've enjoyed using dual screen phones like the LG solutions, I would run screaming from the larger tech tubers right now. I feel like you're going to get a video that's really wishy-washy. It says a couple nice things in a nice tone, but then dog whistles like crazy. Just, I mean, like pointing out every single potential deal breaker for their audience so that their audience feels smart for not having considered this phone in any serious way. But on the surface, the video is going to be really pretty with great B-roll and nice music and lots of affirmation commentary, affirmative commentary, but under the surface of that, very clearly do not buy this phone. So I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to this because of how successful I've found the experiments to be on LG and how as a daily driver phone, I kind of don't want to go back to single screen for the majority of uses that I have for phones these days. But yeah, I'm also pushing back against the idea that somehow $1,400 for this is beyond the pale. This phone will not sell well because it is a $1,400 phone. This phone, people claiming that it won't sell well because it's $1,400 for a Snapdragon 855, in my opinion, could not show better how off the pulse they are by complaining about specs on a $1,400 phone. The general tone, the general commentary when we look at a phone like the Galaxy Z Flip, which launched at $1,400 with a Snapdragon 855 in a much more fragile overall form factor, and no support for business-grade solutions like an active stylus, the overwhelming commentary on this was, it's an oddity, but it's also an experiment, and it's kind of a flex phone. Even Samsung calls it a statement phone. But it was judged with a bit more nuance, because it's Samsung, and it's pretty. And so it gets a lot of passes. But $1,400 for a productivity-focused Microsoft version of what a mobile communicating mini tablet could be, beyond the pale. Just complete no-go. That can't be. Too expensive. For so much more screen, a better hinge design, stylus support, I don't see anything in here which makes me feel like this isn't competitive against folding phones and Z Flips and Galaxy Fold 2s. I'll be very surprised if a Galaxy Fold 2 5G is under $2,000. So to arrive at a more durable product with a slightly less powerful processor that no one is currently maxing out and to get stylus support, you might be able to save $600 or $700. To me, that seems like a reasonable collection of pros and cons. So I'm not angsty about this. We go into it with the expectation this is a first generation product, a niche product, because currently there's not a ton of traction on folding phones and dual screen, and we build from there. I don't have a problem with this. Again, now it's going to, what's funny is all the people rushing to LG's defense now. Like, how many articles have you seen where, oh, Microsoft made a $1,400 phone. Here's why the Velvet can do almost everything that the Surface Duo can do, but cheaper. Now, suddenly, because, you know, again, if it's LG versus Samsung or Apple, LG is the obvious loser because of SEO and reasons. But now that there's someone even smaller in the phone space, like, you know, poop rolling downhill, now LG gets to be a winner. I love it. I love it. I love how predictable. I love how predictable this game has gotten. And it's a terrible look. It's why no one should take TechTubers seriously, myself included. The last one. Oh, ooh, are we already starting to send mail in reviews? Oh, so yeah, sorry, to finish up my story. I sent a breakdown, and I'm going to follow up, like, after the first wave, because I know I'm not going to have early access to a Surface Duo. I'm still not entirely sure what my Surface strategy is going to be, but right now I'm talking to TK. I really don't want to spend much time with the Galaxy Note. I don't think the Note is going to do anything special for me. It's going to be a crazy powerful phone. It's not going to have a headphone jack for me to use as a content creation platform. It's going to have DeX, which is going to be awesome. But I'm seriously thinking that TK and I might split up our review strategies, where I'll spend some time with the Duo and he'll wrap up his Note, and then we'll switch, because we haven't pulled off a good trade showdown for a while. Like, our best one was still our first one, where it was a G7 versus a Huawei. And that was a really fun showdown, long-term review showdown to put together. So I think we're going to go stylus phone versus stylus phone. And both of us are pretty well versed on LGs. So we'll be able to mix that in. You're like, oh, yeah, I'm using the Duo and it can do this. And like, man, it can't even prop up a Note. It just lays there like a lump. And then you can always pull out a V60 or a Velvet, and we'll be able to kind of manage that. But I don't know. Like, I don't know exactly what this is going to be, but I'm going to send a reply. As soon as those early videos go out, I'm going to follow up with that Microsoft PR to say, like, hey, everything I predicted came true. You know, you've got all these channels basically trashing your first-gen product. But don't worry, when you come out with the Surface Duo 2, they'll go back and you know, wax poetic about how underrated the Duo actually was, and how elegant and how refined and all these things that, you know, we refused to point out in our first video. But now that we take a look back at it, man, that was better than we thought it would be. Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. From Nom, can any phone have dual screen cases? I don't know that. I don't know that that would work well. When you really look at what type of software development and programming goes into managing dual screen well, I'm sure most phones can pull off like screen mirroring, right? So you can connect most USB 3 and some USB 2 phones to some kind of external display. And it's just going to copy what's on your screen. To get two screens to interact is an order of magnitude more complicated than it would seem. So like if you go wide view on an LG, the eye is going to detect some of those little hitches where the two screens are working well together, but they might not be perfectly frame by frame in sync. And Microsoft is claiming that they have corrected for that, where two distinctly separate screens are going to operate as close to one continuous workspace as they can manage it. Those challenges are difficult to work out. And the same thing, you know, it's different pros and cons. And we can look at a Galaxy Fold and go, oh, wow, look at this engineering. But the frame and the hinges are less cool than full 360-degree wraparound hinges on something like the Duo. You know, like it's kind of a big deal that we have a phone that can do this. Dual screen, we've never really pulled that off before. So LG has a plastic case with some decently reinforced hinges to do this for the V60. Microsoft doing this as the built-in solution for the Duo is expensive. That is hard to do right. No one has done it. And if you're first, you're pricey. It's always more expensive to be first. So, I mean, again, it's tricky. So Punch Kuhn asks, what does Duo do that a V60 can't that justifies the price hike? And again, my reply is, there are going to be people who do not want this tank in a pocket. And a Duo is going to minimize all of this and work more seamlessly as a dual screen solution. And you don't miss out on things like stylus support. So again, it's not, I still push back against this notion. Like just because you can point to another solution, which may or may not be more popular or cheaper, that isn't the winner. Because Samsung exists, it doesn't make LG have to justify their pricing. Because a V60 exists, that's different than a Duo. Again, there are pros and cons. The pro is at any time I can pop this V60 out of this dual screen case and have a regular mammoth phone. And that's great. And we can understand this. That's the compromise, though, is that you have to put this plastic case around your phone to enable the second screen, which is asymmetrical, which doesn't, you know, there's this kind of notch and how the phones kind of fit together. The phone and the screen fit together will not be as refined or as machined or as smooth as a Surface Duo. They're different. They overlap on a lot of different products and services. I'd still probably lean towards the V60 being a better content creation device. The camera is almost certainly going to be better than the camera on the Duo. But if I'm working out of spreadsheets and documents and, you know, I'm doing group meetings and office work, Duo starts to make a lot more sense. So we would want to ask, you know, who's out there trying to manage work on the go, work from home, multiple projects, you're trying to do document style collaboration, and who's trying to edit and render 4K video from their phones? Now I've got a solution, a dual screen solution that could be good for both of those situations. That's competition. If I want all of the benefits of Surface design, metal machined body, wraparound hinges built into the phone, absolutely minimizing the distance, the gap in between those two displays, we only have a first generation Surface Duo. That's it. That's the gig. And so we got to build from there. But that doesn't mean that the Surface Duo gets a pass, because I'm real tired of YouTubers like, oh, better luck next year. Just keep refining it, because that's how all products go to die. Look at all of the people who are so proud of themselves for being clever. I only buy LG phones when they're at bargain bin prices. Like, I know the LG G8 launched at a reasonable price against the Galaxy S10, but I waited a couple months until they were just trying to get rid of them off store shelves, and I got it at even a lower price than that because I'm super smart. Great. Go be a savvy consumer. The issue is there is no G9. G9 is gone. The phones didn't sell. So you wanted all of those power user features, all of those premium components, all of the top tier best specs that you could have in a medium-sized smartphone? Gone. There's V60 and there's Velvet. So if we keep playing this game that only Samsung and Apple deserve to have positive commentary on first generation products, then everything dies. And that's way less fun for tech. We want a more vibrant and competitive tech landscape. And unfortunately, that means from time to time, we're going to have our hearts broken. But when you see some obvious advantages, beautiful design, aesthetic, manufacturing, again, this is not easy to do. You at least need to acknowledge what this is looking to do right and who it's for. Because this is not going to be the average daily driver phone. But we're going to talk about a Galaxy S series like that's for regular consumers when, again, a $350 Pixel does all the average user stuff just fine. Like, there's nothing about this phone experience that most of your family and friends won't really like, let alone appreciate the extra, cost savings. Dave Burns, too, are the two displays higher pixel density than the V60 and the Velvet? I believe they are. They're smaller. So again, I need to look up. The aspect ratios are different, but they are smaller individual displays at around a 1080p resolution. From Fat Produce, I kind of think that the Duo might have benefited from having a Snapdragon 700 series CPU if it would have helped get more longevity out of the smaller capacity battery in the Duo. I'll be really curious to see how that goes down. That's one of the great unknowns, is the battery is a little lean and dual screening can take up some juice. It's what I love about V60 is that 5,000 milliamp hour battery on two displays, and I'm still getting all day runtime out of some pretty aggressive use. So that is absolutely a fair concern. But I'll also be curious to see how that manifests when I'm writing scripts and watching a YouTube video. You know, like, that kind of stuff barely hits my Velvet. Like, I can. Like, when I want to get out of the office, I'll go sit on our little patio and I'll prop up a Velvet with a Bluetooth keyboard and go to town, and like, that doesn't hit the battery at all. Like, video streaming on one screen and writing a script on another, and I'm good. So again, I'll be really curious to see, because I don't have the highest expectations, but I'm still pretty confident we're going to talk about an all-day phone with the Duo. Simon says, Hypno, quote, "I was wrong. Good phone was actually good. Face pull thumbnail." So I might have mentioned John Redinger in my email to Microsoft PR, because I'm seeing the same thing. I said this in the editorial I wrote for Windows Central. So I wrote a Windows Central, an Android Central editorial saying, like, you know, Microsoft doesn't care about Android users directly. Microsoft wants to make a Surface, and they're using software that makes the most sense at the time. And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, a Surface Duo 3 is using some form of Windows and not Android. But you got to start somewhere. And they don't seem to want to reinvent the wheel on another OS again. So I might have mentioned one of my favorite people to point out. When the original Surface launched, John on Techno Buffalo put together this video about, you know, what was Microsoft thinking, and there's no conveyance and the software and the hardware and blah, 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 blah. And very shortly before the Surface 2 came out, he came out with another video looking back at the Surface and saying, you know what, this is actually really elegant and I like it how it does this. And wouldn't you know it, it was way better after I used it for a while. And since then, I've gotten to know John better, and I've worked with John a little. He's even been on the podcast as a guest for the Creator Chats. And I really, really, really like his current turn more towards being a commentator for things he likes, as opposed to trying to pretend that individuals like us can all be objective reviewers. I feel like that's what gets a lot of people into trouble, is you're making content that satisfies a YouTube algorithm for a certain audience demographic, but you're also trying to hide behind this idea of objectivity. Instead of just being honest about what you like and what you don't like, you come to my channel, you're going to hear me talk about gaming and content creation. Do any of your family members care about editing and rendering 4K video from their phones? They don't. They really don't. But when you see one of my videos and know that that's something I genuinely do on the regular, and that's how I share content with my family, is cutting up little videos of Lex and putting music and transitions, and that's how I like to show what's going on with our family, I feel like you can be fairly confident that if your needs are lower than rendering 4K video from a phone, they're going to be decently well met by a phone that could do that well. That's my gig. Michael SSBU, duo 6 months later, I was wrong. Shocked, gasp, thumbnail. Oh, this is so funny. It's so funny. Dave Burns, too. I think the camera will be the weakest part of the duo, followed by the battery, but I have a feeling the duo will be plugged in all day. Maybe. Again, there are some definite concerns. Battery life would be a concern. The camera, being an older module, would be a concern. But I really hate this spec sheet verdict. You know, like every little update for Apple gets endlessly, breathlessly, investigated. And Samsung to a lesser degree. I mean, it's like every development at Samsung and rumor and leak and Mystic Bronze and every piece just gets breathlessly investigated. And then a phone like the Xperia 1 Mark II comes out and they're like, it's a phone, it's got a camera, and I couldn't get the same results out of this camera, so it's not good enough. And then they'll never go back to talk about the Xperia 1 Mark II. It's never reinvestigated. You know, we can put out videos about, are dual screen phones really worth it, but then not really talk about dual screen phones. Instead, you're like, well, I didn't want to review the Velvet, but I'm pretending that this is an editorial on dual screen phones is what I'm doing. Just be honest. Just be honest. This is who I am. This is how I use my phone. This is what I expect from my phone. And these are the products and services that I review within that context. I don't see where that's a problem. In fact, I feel like that should be standard operating procedure. And instead, we still have this notion of like, well, I protect average consumers. Okay. So in protecting average consumers, here's a $1,000 OnePlus 8 Pro. I'm going to use the OnePlus 8 Pro to open my Snapchat. Oh, see, there you go. Excellent performance. And now I tried pushing the shutter button 5 times off of my porch under full auto HDR. And the photos aren't as good, and you can tell by the pixels. So are average consumers going to enjoy the experience of using a OnePlus 8 Pro? Me thinks not. You should check out my video on the Galaxy S20. What are we doing? What are we doing? Seriously. Again, I'm preaching at the choir. So I know most of you have followed me on these kinds of rants in the past. Oh, we got a whole conversation going about software and updates. Microsoft did say they were going to be good for 3 years of updates on the Surface Duo. I know there was an editorial. Was it Android Central? I can't remember. Floating around like, oh, Google needs to offer 5 years of update support. And yeah, I know a lot of people are saying like Google should force it, but again, they can't. It's nice. It's a unicorn thought. Like, wouldn't it be magic if we could get Google to give us 5 years of updates on a Pixel. But the licensing and agreements and the hardware and the support all have to go through Qualcomm. So, yes, we absolutely need to keep putting pressure on Google, but the editorial is Google should pressure Qualcomm to extend support for older chipsets. That's the discussion. Until that happens, it's or until the market shifts and every manufacturer is responsible for making their own chipset, like Google custom CPUs would be really exciting right now, now that we're losing Kirin. And then playing maybe even with, you know, different chiplet design from AMD or hybrid design from Intel. That's the gig. So I'm not too bothered. The frustrating thing is like I've been saying stuff like this in the past. A Snapdragon 845 is still plenty powerful for most heavy lifting usage scenarios. Like I can pull out my Razer Phone 2. Still have a great gaming experience, still render video like a champ. Very little causes that phone to stutter, even for it being on Android 9. An 855 is still ridiculous overkill for most consumer needs, doubly so Snapdragon 865. And we know component pricing is going to get more expensive next year with the 875. So it would behoove Google to put more pressure on Qualcomm to extend support, but it's still a not up to Google situation. Geet Madden 1991. As a small YouTuber, I don't blame anyone who is chasing the algorithm. You have to play the game until you have 1,000 true fans. No, you don't. You don't. You don't. All right, let me get this out of the way here. I'm scrolling to the end. There's a lot of commentary here, and I'm trying to wrap this up. Dave Burns, my love causes it to stutter. And from Nam, why do we not talk about Velvet Snapdragon 845? I mean, I would love to. There are a few situations where the 845 is still outperforming the 765. It's just, I don't think we're going to get it here in the United States. I mean, I might try and look at importing one. I don't know that that's commentary that's still super necessary on my channel. But it's fine. Again, like, it just goes to show, like, there is manufacturing availability for some of these older parts, and they still perform well above average consumer expectations. So it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice to be like, oh, there might be some extra life in some of these. But right now we're going through this 5G transition that's messing up our normal timetables in the midst of social distancing and shelter in place. So it's tough. It's a lot harder to get that kind of global view on things. So it's kind of the same phone. I think that's why not a lot of people are really talking about it as much, as it's sort of a parts bin swap so that LG has some solution that can be a little bit cheaper for regions that aren't anywhere near a 5G rollout. So there you go. Still a really nice phone though. Velvet, surprisingly well-built phone. DTNL, Qualcomm themselves might be the sole reason for potentially killing the Velvet 845 sales. LG needs to keep up with security updates, but Qualcomm is not going to play ball for extending support for Android. I could be kind of curious to see. You know, this is one of the things, like, ever since, like, the, what was it, the Snapdragon 801? Or was it the 805? That, like, just got wrecked by Qualcomm. Like, phones like the OnePlus X came out and then immediately were sort of like pushed out of the support queue for future updates. I don't know. I mean, we haven't seen that Qualcomm in a while. It's just, we want to see a Qualcomm that enables, if we've got chipsets like 660s coming out, like Panasonic making their tough book on the 660 and then promising a 5-year commitment to sort of corporate security upgrades or updates, I should say, then there's plenty of room for consumer support at 3 to 4 years. Like, we should be able to handle that just fine. Oh, Dave Burns, I want a Velvet. I'm so conflicted. That's a good problem to have. There are actually some really sweet phones out there right now. And along the way, I don't think we've seen better competition for different niche products. I'm planning a video that is just talking about what are the different kinds of phones. Because I'm real tired of, like, it's a smartphone. It should just work. Because that's BS. And I'm real tired. Again, I'm listening to Android podcasts where they're throwing around the it just works. I picked it up and it didn't just works. So it needs to just works. And what they should do is they should make everything cheaper and just works. Why don't they use the just works filter? Oh, if only the manufacturing were a just works manufacturing, because then it would just work. I'm so tired of this. It's so lazy. Basically, whenever you use that phrase as a tech reviewer, you don't have an informed opinion on the nuances of what's up. Just like I tried picking it up and smashing it with my nose, and it didn't do what I imagined it should do in my brain. It should just work, is basically what you sound like. So I'm looking at doing a video of, like, what's a communicator phone? Because I feel like an iPhone SE is an incredible communicator. The Pixel 4a, an excellent communicator, but with broader appeal for content consumption. But if you really wanted to just sit down and stream a movie on a phone, maybe instead of the Pixel, you should be looking at a TCL. Or even, like, you could go cheaper, excuse me, and look at a phone like a Stylo. Again, we're not talking about heavy lifting. We're not talking about gaming. We're not talking about a ton of social media. If listening to music and watching video is one of your primary activities, a Pixel 4a might be too rich. And you might not be getting the best experience. Maybe you want a larger screen just to look at what that content is. So a content consumption phone is a different phone than a gaming phone. And a gaming phone isn't necessarily more powerful, but it should come with some perks and some additional accessories and some software focus on gaming as a primary service. And then we can flip that again. What about an office productivity phone? What about a content creation phone as opposed to a content consumption phone? And we have good options for these, but we're not talking about phones like we talk about laptops. We're reading the specs, we're ignoring compromises on popular platforms, and then we're saying, oh, it's too expensive, or it's not worth it enough, or it should just work. Instead of saying, like, hey, if you really want to make something, a Sony might rock your socks. Now, if you're not really engaged, if you're not really interested in making something, then let's look at some other options. And I would love to hear that from some of the more established content creators out there. Because right now I feel this, like, oh, you got to play the game. That never goes away. You got to, until you have your first 1,000 true fans, you got to play the game and chase the algorithm. What makes you think someone with 1 million subscribers isn't actively chasing the algorithm? What makes you think their content is free of that type of influence in how they produce their commentary? When it's verified that they get more hits on a popular phone than on a less popular phone, why wouldn't you expect some influence over how that all goes down? As I stream this on Twitch, because I'm so frustrated with the current situation in how content creators are treated on YouTube, and where if you go to somegadgetguy.com, you will find a higher quality version of every one of my videos than what I upload to YouTube. Let me tell you firsthand, when you try to talk about the broad collection of technology that we have access to, YouTube doesn't like it. That's where I'm at. So we should probably start wrapping this up. Dave Burns, why don't they have a just works button? Oh, push the Whopper button. Oh, that was was a fun ad campaign. I could totally go for a burger. We might have to make that happen today. Geet Madden 1991, what do you say is a good productivity phone? Productivity phones, I start looking at things like hardware solutions. Obviously, it wouldn't be as high a recommendation just because it's an older phone now, but having a hardware keyboard is a certain style of productivity that many appreciate, and a BlackBerry was a great fit. I'd also still consider a Note. I would run screaming from the Note 20. If you're looking to buy new, you got to suck it up and move up to the Note 20 Ultra, or you have a really wonderful experience on a Note 10. Especially a Note 10 Ultra. Again, I'm a little less into the gimped Note 10, but it's still a better buy than the Note 20. Again, you look at outfitting with accessories and hardware that enable a different tier of communication, document support, and collaboration. And for that, dual screens become a much more interesting commentary on that. What I do on Velvet and V60, what I've been playing with since the V50 dual screen, is a different tier of smartphone interaction. Again, like streaming a video and pulling up my Discord, playing a game and watching a movie. This all sounds so frivolous, like, oh, so distracted, or why would you want to do that? Every time I do that, it means I don't have to have another screen on. I don't watch something from my TV and play a game on my phone. I don't stream a video from another computer. Right now, with the heat wave that's going through Southern California, I'm actually kind of surprised. I'm really happy that this stream lasted, because we've got rolling blackouts. We have warnings that we're going to lose power. And if my major workstation gets shut down because of a rolling blackout, I'm not exaggerating. I will still be getting work done from a dual screen phone and a backup battery. That's still going to be a thing. So again, it's we talk about like, oh, you're so distracted, and why don't you just put your phone down? But people do that. People stream Netflix and interact with their phones. People watch TV or play a game and then are distracted by communication coming in from a mobile device. Like, you're already multi-screening. Doing that in that moment is a net positive for what else you can shut down to accomplish that. And so productivity to me means something like a dual screen, stylus support, a hardware keyboard, or using accessories to kind of replicate that. Like, I might use a Bluetooth keyboard and a mouse on a phone. It's a capable computer. So that's where I'm at. Communicators are smaller, punchier, shorter form interactions. Productivity phones are usually larger screen with additional hardware. Gaming is usually more modular with some type of accessory support. I feel like this is worth digging into with a bit more nuance and discussion. So yeah, it's good times. Oh, Kyle Ruggles, rolling blackouts, man. You know, we're going to have a bunch. Like, it's going to be what we recorded the hottest temperature on Earth ever in Death Valley over the weekend. And what, it hit like 133 degrees Fahrenheit. So yeah, this is going to be a brutal summer. So that's going to be pretty rough. On that note, let's go ahead and end this before, I use up all the electricity in my neighborhood and then, you know, kill the block for power. I'm going to break out a phone and a Bluetooth keyboard so that I can get some writing done after we wrap this up. Folks, first of all, everything we talked about today, show notes, somegadgetguy.com, better quality videos, somegadgetguy.com. And then also, of course, just a huge thank you and a huge shout out to all of you that join me weekly. I love seeing all these faces, familiar faces, getting into these conversations. I know sometimes this can be a little wacky or antagonistic. You know, I like to pick on some of you for some of this stuff. But the main thing that I hope we can all walk away with is that it's good to care about this. It's good to keep our eye on what's going on. Follow up on some of these news stories. And then also be empowered with good information so that we can be the resources for our family, for our friends, to be good tech neighbors, to be good tech citizens. So Kyle Ruggles, 2020, worst year ever. So Thank you for being along for the ride on this, because soapboxy, sure, and repetitive, you bet, but it's stuff we should care about. And I feel like to say we care about it means that we actually need to put some effort into caring about it, which is what I hope we accomplish every week, which is why I still love doing these Monday morning podcasts. So, folks, I hope you are staying safe. If you're in a part of the world like where I'm at, I hope you're staying cool. It's going to get really gross out there, both in terms of shelter in place and schools going back into session and what to do about work from home and homeschooling and beating the heat. I'm really nervous for my daughter that her first week of remote classes is going to be interrupted by power failure. Like, that's going to suck. But yeah, there's still so many challenges that we need to work on and sort out that I hope you stay safe. I hope you stay well. So I want you to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I'll catch you back here next Monday. I hope to see everyone back here again for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Stay safe. Be well. And I'll catch you back. Take care.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.